This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. KPP Financial. Independent thinking, shared success. And now today's podcast.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Invest Talk. I'm Steve Peasley, and I want to take a little minute, a little time here to thank everybody yesterday who met with me at San Jose. As you know, I was in San Jose all day yesterday talking with people, and it was kind of interesting. I always enjoy it because everybody has such interesting stories about their lives and where they're going financially, where they've been. It's kind of fun, really, for me, anyways. But I want to thank everybody who met with me yesterday. I appreciate that. And, of course, you guys who didn't meet with me, you're welcome to call and ask your investing questions. We do this every day, Monday through Friday, same hour, Monday through Friday, 4 to 5 Pacific time. Been doing it for 20-plus years. Now, when you do call, of course, you are driving the show. You're taking it to places you want it to go. It's a financial show, so we got to stay within the financial sphere. I don't want to get into any other kinds of topics, financial sphere. And of course, my goal here is to help you reach that goal of financial freedom. So that my goal is to teach. Today we had a class. I had a class, Invest Talk Academy, and it was all about inflation, deflation, and stagflation. And it really is interesting to refresh my memory and knowledge of those topics, where they came from and stuff. I don't think I've ever been in an environment, grew up in an environment of deflation, but stagflation, yes. It's definitely stagflation. Anyways, that was an interesting topic, but you drive the show to whatever topics you want to talk about. As long as it's financial, I'm up for it. So, and I'll do my best to answer all your financial questions, and we'll do this together. We'll take one step at a time. We'll get to that financial freedom goal. We can. So you got to call, though. 888-99-CHART is my number. 888-992-4278. Now, my main talking point today. Feds are blocking tax breaks of charitable donations. What? That sounds unusual, doesn't it? The IRS and the Treasury have issued final rules blocking attempts by certain states to work around the new cap for state and local tax deductions. Remember the tax law that was passed not that long ago, and it benefited most people in the Midwest and the lower cost areas, but on the coast, the high cost areas, it hurt them because it took away some of the tax benefits of property taxes that you're paying. So some states try to get around that. And the IRS, and we're going to talk about it. We'll talk about it. It's very interesting. I thought it was very interesting today. Anyways, we're also going to talk about why are they won't buy a house? Why do some people won't buy a house? What is in their thinking? Why are they not? Because I don't know, you've heard me talk about it, but millennials have been postponing buying a house. Of course, they also have been postponing forming families, but there are just groups of people who don't want to buy a house. Why? They can afford it. They just don't want to. Also, I don't know if you saw after hours, Blue Apron did a reverse split. Do you know what splits are? Do you know what reverse splits? Why would they do that? Why would they do a reverse split? So I'm going to make sure we all understand that. And I also want to talk about the yield curve. I know I've been talking about it more and more often because of it's getting close to, it's been squeezing. So I want to talk about that a little bit and why the Fed might be cutting rates, why the experts think that. So that's what I plan to talk about today. But of course, you come first, as I said, the number, listener line number is 888-99-CHART.
Serena in Napa Valley, how you doing? Or in Napa, how you doing, Serena?
Hi, I'm a younger person. Okay. I recently worked at a job where they offered me the benefit of having a 401k plan and company stock.
Great.
However, I've left that company in order to pursue higher income so I could support myself a little better.
Oh, that's always a good thing.
Yes. And now I have these teeny little balances, and I'm not sure if it would be beneficial to me to keep it, roll it over, get a check, or what I should do.
Do not get a check, okay? Because then you'll have to pay taxes on it immediately. And you probably got a higher paying job, so you might be in a higher tax bracket. You definitely don't want to pay taxes on it. When you say teeny, are you talking about under $1,000?
Yes, I've got about $500 in 401k and about $300 in the company stock.
Okay. The company stock, is that in the 401k?
Looks like it.
If it's inside the 401k, I would probably sell those stock, and I'd roll that 401k into an IRA.
Okay.
It's very simple to do. You can go to a bank, you can go to Schwab, you can go to Fidelity, you can go to almost any one of those and say, hey, I have a 401k, I'd like to roll into an IRA, and they'll go out of their way to help you.
Does it cost anything to do that?
Free. Well, let me rephrase that. Sometimes the 401k people charge like $30 or $50, but most of them do not. It's generally free.
Okay.
Then when it's in the IRA, you can put it in a money market, you can buy a mutual fund with it, you can add to it up to $4,000 a year, and if you're young, and you do sound young, it would be wise to add to it. Does the new company offer 401k?
No, not yet.
Okay. So then I'd roll it into an IRA, move it out from where it is today, and just you can go to the bank and put it there if you wanted to.
Okay.
You know, use CDs. But don't take it. Because, you know, this is your retirement. You're going to build it over the years to come.
Okay, perfect.
Okay. Thank you for calling. Thank
you.
Our InvestTalk mission is to help you make better investing decisions. To do that on your own, thumbs up or thumbs down choices based on good, solid investing principles. But we need your questions to keep us on track. 888-99-CHART or click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin on InvestTalk.com.
Bill in San Francisco. How are you doing, Bill?
I've heard you talk about annuities. I ran across a new one which I've never heard of before. I'm sure you're familiar with it, but I'm not. So I'd like to get your pros and cons on it, please.
Okay.
That's what equity index annuity.
Think about what they're doing. An equity index annuity, everybody, is an annuity. It's an insurance product in which they take your money that you invest and they invest it in an index. Now, they usually tell you which index. It will be the S&P 500, or did they specify?
Yeah, there's different ones. I think one they use as an example is S&P 500.
Yeah, that's one of the most popular ones. Okay, so what they do is they take the money, and they give you an equity index annuity, and they also guarantee a return, usually 3 to 5%. I don't know what this one did, Bill, but they usually do guarantee a return. The problem you have with this is that annuities charge anywhere from 2 to 3% annual cost. What are they doing with that annuity? They're buying an index with it. They know that the index over a long period of time, and remember, they're tying you up in an annuity for 7 years or 10 years, depending on the length of the annuity. So they know over that period of time, the index will return approximately 10% annually. So they know, because they're smart people, their odds are with them. The probabilities are with them that they'll get 10% of return. So they guarantee you 3% without too much trouble. And then they can charge high fees for holding the annuity for you. So they make lots of money on the fees, therefore reducing your ultimate gain because you've got to pay the fees out of the return you're getting. It's a very good deal for the insurance company. They love these.
Well, the way they pitched it to me was that if you make money, they take a piece of the action and you get money. But if the index goes down, you don't lose from that. They then index you down the next year at the lower rate, but you still have the same amount of money as before.
That's right. Then this one is promising you. Remember I told you they always promise you a return? This one is just promising you'll never go down.
Right.
That's not as good as others I've heard. Others I've heard, they promise you at least a small return every year. Don't think this is something great for you. It's not.
Do they still have the mortality rates and the all the other fees in there?
Not usually. Again, these are very complex insurance contracts. They're hard to understand. Trust me. I've read them. I used to be in the insurance business. They're very difficult. I'll tell you this. In general, the person who's making the most money is the insurance company. I don't want to say that you won't do well. You can do well. But you can do better if you take the same amount of money and put it in an equity index yourself, and then take some of that money and maybe buy a CD with it and spread the risk around or something, and you'll do better. They just give you that comfort of knowing they guarantee that you will never lose. Everybody loves that word, guarantee. Good luck, Bill.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to Invest Talk. I'm Steve Peasley, and I'm taking your questions live, 888-99-CHART.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Okay, how about some news items, some business news items? I always talk about business news here, unless it's political news that affect business, and then I'll talk about that too. Restoration Hardware, symbol RH, raised its forecast, and the stock was trading much higher, up 24%. Okay, Restoration Hardware, you know, that's that high-priced retailer that specializes in home furnishings. Have you seen their catalogs? Have you been to one of their stores? It's kind of a neat kind of place. They have implemented a luxury strategy, which actually I think is pretty smart. Luxury. I mean, why not go after the people that have money, right? The company was founded in 1979 in Eureka, California. I've been to Eureka once when I was 19. It's on the coast, way above San Francisco, 100, 200, 300 miles above San Francisco. People think San Francisco is, you know, at the top of northern of California. No, it's in the middle of the state. Everybody forgets about Northern California. San Francisco is not Northern California. It's only north of L.A., that's all. You know, but Eureka is in Northern California. Anyways, Restoration Hardware. They even opened up a what they call a scaled-down version of their, you know, luxury little doodads. And this is for the small living spaces. Have you seen those small houses? People are living in those little tiny mobile houses or whatever you call them. I don't know. Anyways, it's funny. They Restoration Hardware is targeting that business with some fancy hardware, you know, knobs and things for cabinets. Kind of interesting. Anyway, Restoration Hardware is doing pretty good. Really doing quite well. Oil today. Did you see the news with the two oil tankers on fire? And of course, there's all that political thing. So oil, you would think oil's near $53 a share. I mean, you have the Strait of Hormuz, which is a choke point, being attacked by whoever, and you would think that would be extremely scary for the oil market. And so oil prices, which are priced internationally in dollars, right, our dollars, you would think that would jump oil prices tremendously. And if it happened 10, 15 years ago, it would have. 5 years ago, 10 years. But today it was like the oil market went, ho-hum, who cares? Why is that? Why did they not worry about it? I mean, why didn't our markets care about them? Maybe because we're very close to oil independence, and maybe because we're the largest producer of oil now. And we don't have those kinds of problems. Maybe because we're less dependent on that Middle East. I think that's a good thing. Now, that doesn't mean oil won't go up if there's a big problem in the Middle East, because they supply a big chunk of oil in and around the world. But I thought that was interesting. The reaction to it. Not much reaction to it in the market. Yeah, so I thought that was something we should share. This is Invest Talk, everybody. I'm Steve Peasley. And if you've been listening to Invest Talk for a while, you have heard me say that I believe every investor should determine their individual risk tolerance. How much risk can you handle in the market? And as a first step of building that, figuring that out, you need to define what risk that you are willing, what your comfort zone is. Well, how do I do that? Well, we have an easy way to calibrate that. To calibrate your own personal risk tolerance. It's free. It's an online tool at investtalk.com. It's called Riskalyze. It's a questionnaire, a very short questionnaire. So go to investtalk.com.
listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Good afternoon, Steve and Justin. This is Zach from New York. I appreciate the show, and thank you for sharing your experience. My question for you today is in regards to mandatory 401k distributions and rolling them over into another retirement account, such as an IRA. My father is 71, and he has probably like two different retirement accounts, and he is still working and contributing to one right now. So he will have to be taking out of them soon. So my question to you is, he'd like to roll them over, his distributions over into an IRA with different beneficiaries. And I was curious what the tax implications of that action were for the beneficiaries of that IRA or other retirement account. Thanks for the podcast, and I look forward to hearing your answer soon.
Okay, so of course, there is no tax implications for him as he owns those retirement accounts, and he can combine them, roll them over into a rollover IRA. Now, you as a beneficiary or whoever the beneficiary are, nothing happens until he passes away, of course. And then as a beneficiary, you will get the IRA, and it'll be a beneficiary IRA, okay? At that point, you are required to start taking distributions, and there's a couple of ways you can do it. One, and this is not my area of expertise, so I apologize for that. But I know there's two ways. One, you could take the money all at one time, but then you'll be taxed on it. But you can also spread it out. And I think there's two ways that you can spread it out so you don't take it all at one time, so you don't have to pay taxes all at one time. One is over a number of years. You set the time period. And I think the other one is based on your age. But you got to take it sooner than you would your normal IRA. So it's an inherited IRA, and it's different. If it goes to his wife, then it's based on her age and so on and so forth. It just becomes her IRA. But as a beneficiary, other than his wife, it's different. So you need to talk to a tax guy that knows this, a CPA type person knows this better than I do. I just know that that exists. Good question, though. Good thought.
Do you have questions about FDIC security, mortgages, money market funds, losses to your retirement plans? Give us a call today, 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. My main talking point today concerns the story of the Feds blocking the tax break. Now, the Fed, what we're talking about is the tax law that was implemented not that long ago, okay, a couple of years ago. And what it did is it limited to $10,000 that was a cap for state and local tax deductions. So if your property tax was under $10,000, you got to take the whole benefit, right? But people like us here in California and those people in maybe New York State, the property tax, or maybe Boston area, there's many areas. Property taxes are much higher than $10,000, so we were capped at $10,000. So some states trying to get around it, and I've noticed that you cannot get around paying taxes. You cannot come up with rules or laws or regulations to avoid paying taxes in many situations. So the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act limited the captives at $10,000. The Treasury and IRS issued a final rule on Tuesday to address the workarounds, largely putting all these workarounds, these new charitable funds, out of business, really. Okay, and it also dampens pre-existing charitable tax credits programs in 33 other states. So what happened is these states pass legislation that will allow municipalities to create charitable funds to pay for their local services and offer property tax credits to incentivize homeowners to give to the charitable funds. So the taxpayers could write off charitable deductions on their federal income tax rate return. So the city or the state, whoever did it, would pay, could collect money, okay, And you could write this off your property tax, and it's kind of a way to try to get around avoiding the caps. So the IRS and the federal government said, no, I don't think so. They said that the state and or local tax credit is a contribution would constitute a quid pro quo as opposed to actually given to charity, which is true. You cannot get, so it's not a charity thing just because the city or state's paying, using that money in lieu of property tax to do whatever they want to do with it. You could tell it kind of stunk from the very beginning. So they just got rid of that. So I find it fascinating. I noticed that the states were like New Jersey and Massachusetts and New York and Connecticut. I don't understand. Didn't those people, they want to pay taxes, right? No, just like everybody else. We all try to pay as little as, we want to pay our share, but we want to pay as little as possible. But you can't get around it. What was that old saying? Death and taxes. Can't ever avoid death and taxes. Can't do it. On tomorrow, Invest Talk, in May, U.S. import prices had the largest drop in 5 months. The decline in the cost of goods is the latest indication of muted inflation. We had the number CPI, CPI, PPI out, 0.1%. We have no inflation. We're going to talk about that tomorrow. Give me a call, 888-99-CHART.
Numbers are elusive.
Is it only a maximum of 7,000 total between the two accounts?
They're always changing.
And shot up to about 380 at one point. I got in about 291.
On InvestTalk, the focus is on numbers that affect our listeners.
It's about 5% of my overall portfolio.
InvestTalk listeners know it's all about the numbers.
As far as I remember, you only have 60 days to complete a rollover from a 401k into another retirement vehicle.
So the questions keep coming.
I've got a question about insider trading.
From every part of America.
Hi, Steve and Justin. This is G from Philly.
24/7.
Hi, this is Jen from Portland, Oregon.
Using years of experience, Steve Peasley and Justin Klein analyze the complex patterns in those numbers and do their very best to decipher the potential meanings.
Thanks a lot, guys.
InvestTalk.com.
You're listening to an encore presentation of InvestTalk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next InvestTalk.
888-992-4278. Let's talk to Gene, our friend Gene in North Carolina. How you doing, Gene?
Thanks for taking my call, Steve. I want to comment about the topic you had about state income tax and the old law versus the new law about writing it off on your federal tax.
Right. The cap, the $10,000 cap.
Yeah, I'm actually in favor of that. I having the cap, I think it was actually very unfair to the federal government that they allowed people to write off their state income tax. It is actually incentivizes the state to raise their taxes and have an out saying, oh, you can deduct it from your federal tax and you won't pay as much.
I'm going to probably shock you. I'm the one that got penalized by this because my property tax is $18,000 a year. And I'm going to absolutely agree with you. So here, it's costing me a fortune, right? But I think you're absolutely right. I think it's unfair. I thought
Here's
it was
the
unfair.
Shocking part of it. Imagine that your state raises your property tax or your income tax from one year to the other. You make the same amount of money from one year to the other. So you pay a little bit more, but you don't pay as much as you could under the old law. You could deduct it. But what happens is the federal government, they didn't change their tax rate, but they gain less money. They get less federal income tax from you because you had a bigger deduction.
Yeah, I know. So, I know. I think you're right. I think it was unfair.
With the old rule,
I think this is a
the
fairer,
less money the federal government made on your same income.
Nothing. Yeah. Yeah. Gene, good point. I appreciate the call. Thank you. So, yeah. I'm thinking that, the high tax states were, the people who live there, which I am one of them, were kind of taking advantage of everybody else in the country. So that law, the new law kind of never makes it a fair playing field, but it made it a fairer playing field. Thanks, Gene. Appreciate it. Let's go to Farhan in San Jose. How you doing, Farhan?
I'm good, Steve. Thank you for your show. I had a question on treasury bills. While I'm moving to cash, as I'm moving out of the market into cash, I was wondering, rather than parking into money market funds, does it make sense to purchase short-term T-bills like 4 weeks and 8 weeks and ladder them out?
Actually, it does, because remember, the interest you make on those are tax-deductible on treasuries, right? So you might get less interest, but if your income tax is high, you might want the tax benefit. So, and of course, a treasury, a 1 year, 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, 6 months, 1 year, 2 year, 5 year, 10 year, and 30 year, those things that they pay less interest, but it's 100% guaranteed safe. So, there are benefits. If you buy U.S. government treasuries, the interest you make on them are federal tax free. You don't have to count that as income. So, yeah, there's reasons to do it. It depends on your personal circumstances, but yeah. Okay, Fahan, appreciate the call. Thank you. 888-99-CHART, everybody. On top of, let's see. Now, there was a new report here. Amazon has now surpassed Apple and Google as the world's most valuable brand, Amazon. Notice that Apple, Amazon, Google, they're all fighting, right? I mean, they're all trying to get that brand name. Okay, of the top 10 brands, 5 or 6 technology names are undoubtedly on that list, right? And of course, investors want to know that brand prominence can be used to monetize profits, but make money, okay? Make more money, your brand. And that's increased the stock value. Of course, that all everybody wants to. So Amazon is an extremely competitive player in many, many business types of businesses. We all know that. So what does this mean for you as an investor? Well, you got to think about it. Amazon is doing very, very well. Now, don't always, everybody thinks that if Amazon got in your business of your whoever you are, if it got into competing with you, you have to have a plan to compete with Amazon. And of course, I've mentioned, Walmart and Target and various others have a plan. But don't think that Amazon is as interested in business that it's just going to take over, because that's not the case. I'll give you a case in point. Amazon has retreated from the food delivery business. Maybe that's going to help Uber Eats, right? Amazon's not dominating that, and they're having a struggle with that, with their food delivery business. Who's competing with that? Well, look at what Walmart does. They'll deliver it to your house. Remember the article I mentioned last week where not only will Walmart deliver food to your house, they'll go in your house and put the food away in the refrigerator or wherever it needs to be if you want them to. They're testing that. Deliver the food and put it in your cupboards. I think that's pretty funny. Anyways, I don't know if I want somebody in my refrigerator. But I'm just saying, Amazon doesn't always win everything. Now, since we're talking about food, let's talk about Blue Apron. You know who Blue Apron is? Well, food delivery company, right? And they're a public company. I don't really want to talk about Blue Apron, but they announced that they, after hours tonight, that they're going to do a reverse split. 1-for-15 reverse split. Do you know what splits are? Regular splits? What a reverse split is? If a regular split, the stock split, they are called stock split. They are, what happens in a regular split is your stock, you own a share of stock, and if the company announces a split, and I'm going to give you the most simple example because it's just easy to follow. Let's say the company, your stock, you have a stock and it's trading for $100 a share. And the company says, we're going to do a 2-for-1 split. What that means is they're now going to give you another share. You're going to have, for every share you have, you're now going to have 2 shares. And they're going to cut the price in half. So instead of 1 share at $100, you'll have 2 shares at $50 each. So they cut the price out. So it actually does not increase the price of your holdings. It doesn't do a darn thing to increase the price of your holdings, except the perception is that their stock splits are good because when the stock price goes up and up and up and up, they split it to drive the price down a little bit to be more liquid, and then they have more shares out there in the float. That's all good news, and it kind of helps boost the stock price. A reverse split is just the opposite. It kind of, you know, people don't kind of like it. So the Blue Apron is doing a 1-for-15. So if you have 15 shares, now you're going to have 1 share and the price is going to be up. Now, problem is that's kind of viewed as negative. And so after hours, the stock was actually trading down 10% because of that. So 11%. So because it's negative perception of what's happening, people don't like it. Investors don't like it. Now, why would they do a reverse split? Well, to be trading on the exchanges, whether it's the New York or the NASDAQ, you have to have a certain price. You can't, I think the New York Stock Exchange is, I want to say it's $5 a share. It's got to be $5 a share or higher. And in the NASDAQ, I think it's $2 or higher to be on the exchange. So if your stock price goes below that and stays below that, they'll make you do things like a reverse split to get the price up. So they can't leave it that low. Now, I don't know the actual rules, what the actual price is these days. Is it $5 on the Dow? Maybe someone out there knows. I could look it up, I suppose. And $2 on the NASDAQ? Because, and don't think that stocks don't go below those numbers. They do, but they have to make an effort to get it back up, and the exchange will take action if they don't. Anyways, exchanges have rules to be, you know, that you have to comply with. Isn't that interesting? 888-99-CHARTER is our number, everybody. We're live. 888-992-4278.
This is Invest Talk, made possible by KPP Financial. As an investor, you've seen the volatility of the market. To prosper, serious investors need to make sure they are implementing an effective master design, a deliberate plan formulated with the right mix of strategic investing programs. KPP Financial offers such a diverse set of programs, and you can contact Steve or Justin at their offices in Irvine, California, to start a conversation. You can also quickly see what you may be missing anytime when you visit investtalk.com. The phone lines are open. Steve is here, and he's ready for your questions. Call now, 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART is our number, 888-992-4278. Well, let's go to San Francisco. Let's go and talk to Jose. How you doing, Jose? Thanks for calling.
As far as bonds go, if a company goes, they hold priority as far as getting paid out over common shareholders, correct?
Correct.
So there's less risk technically than a shareholder?
Much less risk than a shareholder.
And what about a preferred? Where do they stand?
They're after bonds. Number first in line is secured holders, and that could be higher than bond holders. But bonds are considered secured too. There's several categories. There's secured holders, bond holders, preferred stocks, and then common stocks. So in a liquidation, that's the order of who gets what money.
Okay.
If you don't mind, Jose, I'm going to expand on that idea a little bit. So when you buy a bond and the company goes under and it liquidates it, what Jose is saying is that, well, wait a minute, if I have a bond, don't I get the assets of the company? Yes, you're one of the first ones in line to get some of the assets of that company.
doesn't mean that if you bought $10,000 worth of bonds, you'll get $10,000 worth of assets. It might mean you will get 50%, 75%, but yours is first before the common stockholders. Usually the common stockholders get zip, nothing. Bondholders used to get something, and then that goes right to the book value of the company. If the company was a good, solid company, you'd probably get all your money if it filed bankruptcy. But of course, it probably wouldn't file bankruptcy. It was that solid.
All right, thank you, buddy.
Thank you. Let's go to Pete in Corte Madera. Hi, Pete. Thanks for calling.
I have a question, and it has to do with valuation.
Uh-huh.
A lot of times when you give a value of a stock, you'll say, okay, you do this, do that, and you end up with $50.
Yes.
And then you'll say, well, it's trading for $32.
Right.
Or it's trading for $36. And usually it's not just below valuation which you give it, but it's well below the value that you give it.
Sometimes, yes.
Why is that?
Well, we have numbers that we evaluate. We use different factors to come to a value on every stock that we bought. So it's not always the value is higher. No. Mm-mm.
When you say it's worth $50,
uh-huh.
Does that mean that there's a chance that it's going to actually sell for that price?
What we're saying when we say this is a value, we're looking out at the future to about 12 months down the road, and we say sometime in the next 12 months, it probably is going to sell for this number.
When you say that, that means when it's below, that's what you want.
That's exactly right.
So if it's selling for $30, but then a lot of times I've heard you say, get out.
That's right. Remember, there's two basic ways to look at stocks. There's the fundamental way, and fundamentals are earnings, earnings growth, earnings per share, return on equity, book value, those kinds of numbers, earnings yield and growth to PE. Those are the fundamentals of a company, and based on the fundamentals, we determine or derive at a value of the company. Then the other way to look at stocks is technical, looking at charts.
Right.
So when I look at a chart, I see that maybe the value is $50, but I don't think it's going to make it right now. Right now, I think it's overbought or oversold. It looks like it's hitting support or resist. That's chart reading. So when I say I would probably sell it, I'm reading a chart that says this stock is starting to look like it's heading down. So lock in your profits and buy it back some other time.
Could head up later, but it's not at this point because of just the way the stock is doing.
That's right.
It's a loser.
At least for a short-term period, it looks like it's going to be a loser.
But valuation, that's a fundamental, right?
That's a fundamental, correct.
That's a fundamental. Okay.
Fundamental.
I got you. Thank you.
People are finally beginning to realize that Facebook's product is them, the users, you. You are their product. Facebook harvests terabytes of data of their users, how they behave. And I actually have this in the newsletter this week. It's under Consumer Watch. Okay, the information about you, they sell it. They sell that information. They grab all that information, everything you think you do, pictures you take, websites, YouTube videos you watch, anything and everything, they grab all that information. Okay, they don't care. They're not interested about your privacy. That's not, it's not a concern of theirs. No. Now, the stock is trading flat, but at some point, they're attracting regulations, okay? We see it. You've seen it on TV. Experts are forecasting that the federal government will be driven to intervene with regulations, not only on Facebook, but everybody else. They think, you know, whatever they regulate, they're going to apply to everybody, not just Facebook. Facebook is just the target because they're letting themselves be the target. I mean, they've done things that, you know, with privacy concerns. Did you know that the United States has probably the weakest privacy laws of any country in the world? I don't know about the other countries enforcing them, but we have weak laws. Europe has much better laws and enforce them. So we are weak when it comes to privacy. They're the new big brother. They are the big brother, not government necessarily, even though government does, you know, can do that too. But I thought that was interesting. This is InvestTalk, everybody. I'm Steve Peasley. And of course, we have one goal here, only one goal, and that's to help you become financially free. That means have plenty of money to do whatever you want to do and not what you have to do. So we continue. Get your questions in now, 888-99-CHART.
listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Jason, San Diego. How you doing, Jason?
Good, good. I recently changed jobs, and I rolled my 401k over into an IRA, and it's got about $14,000 in it, and that's about all the investments that I have. Now I'm wondering, what do I do with it? It's not really enough money that I feel like I should invest in individual stocks. Do I buy a mutual fund or couple mutual funds, or what do I do with about $14,000?
You buy several mutual funds, not one, not two. Maybe at $14,000, I would probably buy maybe four.
Okay.
Okay. If you're in a 401k, you may not have very many choices, though.
Well, I rolled it over into an IRA now that I changed jobs.
Okay.
Well, that's why I'm wondering, what do I do? I only had limited choices before.
Right. Okay.
And now it's wide open.
Okay. I would roll it over into either Fidelity Investments, you know, with all the Fidelity mutual funds. They have a program, a no-load, no-transaction fee program over there where you can buy any no-load mutual fund, not just Fidelity, all of them. And so does Schwab. They have what's called a Schwab One program that does the same thing. I'm not pushing one company over another. I don't, you know, I don't have an axe to grind either way.
Sure.
But they have programs that you can buy a number of mutual funds, no load and no transaction fee. The problem they have, though, is there's usually a holding period, which I don't like. 90 days, you can't sell it within 90 days of your purchase. But you're probably not going to sell it that soon. But, you know, for me, I don't like the restrictions, but for you, it'll probably be fine. Then once you do that, you want to pick some good funds, some very good funds. Where's the custodian now, Jason?
Scottrade now.
Okay, Scottrade is not a bad place to be. You can buy mutual funds in Scottrade. Even if you buy no-load funds, they might charge you a trading fee. It's called a transaction fee. Find out what that is, okay? And my guess will be between $20 and $30.
Okay.
You can do it from Scottrade. Just find no load, no transaction fee funds.
They've got a list of hundreds of funds that are like that, that say that they're in their program with no commission or fee or
anything. Perfect. They don't have a transaction fee?
Well, they've got a list of funds that don't, and it's a pretty respectable list.
Then you're going to pick from that list, Jason, because I'll guarantee you there's at least four of them over there that are pretty good quality funds. Look for a good mid-cap and maybe small cap growth and value. And also, one of your four picks should be a international fund.
Okay.
Maybe 20% in the international.
Because I had debated over whether to have four funds like you just mentioned, or just get one total market or S&P 500 or some.
I understand that. And one of your funds could be an index fund. That's not a problem. If you're sticking with the market for long-term, index funds are fine. I would suggest, though, that you can probably do a little bit better if you find a good manager of the mutual funds. So go to Morningstar.com and check out the funds. See what their ratings are. See how they're done against their peer group. Are they always in the top tier of their peer group? If they are, that's the fund you want.
When you look at the Morningstar and they have 4- and 5-star funds, some folks have told me that 5-star fund is maybe all played out and that you might want to look for a good 4-star fund. Is that correct or no?
I'm right in line with those folks, whoever told you that. I like 3- and 4-star funds. The underachievers that are trying to be overachievers as opposed to the overachievers that have already achieved. I have found in my studies that 5-star funds generally underperform going forward.
Should I be worried about the size of the fund at all or not?
Yes. Well, you're asking some good questions. I like not to have more than a couple of billion dollars. I like to have a few hundred million dollars under management. I don't like the big ones. Why? Because they become the whole market and you might as well buy an index fund.
Yeah.
So stay away from the big guys.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks, Jason. Appreciate the call. Very good question. See, now that's a perfect question for everybody else to listen to. It's a really good question. Now, why won't some people buy a home? Then, you know, the American dream, everybody wants to buy a home. Then this really is a case in point for the from the millennials, those people in their early 30s now, or mid 30s, I guess. They have good reasons not to.
One is they like the flexibility where they can live where they want to. They don't, they're not stuck in a house because you have a mortgage at your house and you can't move to where you want to. A lot of them like to live in where the action is, in cities, you know, big places where there's a lot more interesting things to do. They don't have time and don't want to do the maintenance. You know, there's a lot of perks in some of these luxury apartment places. Perks, gymnasiums and movie theaters and massage areas, you know, the luxuries. So, there's good points. Yeah. So, I'm Steve Peasley, and this completes another InvestTalk program, everybody. I thank you for your loyal support and all your questions. So, please come back tomorrow. Tomorrow's Friday. And, of course, I'll be sharing my highlights from the KPP Premium Newsletter that I'll be working on tonight. So, good night, everybody.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein Pavlis Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Steve Peasley is President and Justin Klein Chief Executive Officer of Klein Pavlis Peasley Financial. And they thank you for listening and welcome your comments or questions on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.